I think we will go ahead and get started. I have put this PowerPoint slide up called Tensions. Now, what it really ought to do is be shivering in there, but we didn't quite go to that amount of work. You know, there are always tensions in life. And I think there are tensions especially between parents and children. There is a story about Jonah's mother saying to Jonah, "That's a nice story, but tell me where you've really been these last 3 days." So there's a bit of stuff. Or Thomas Edison's mother, "Of course I'm proud you invented the electric light bulb. Now turn off the light and get to bed." So there's always things going on. Let's just ask the Lord to bless our time together. Father, thank you for this time. Help us to be able to really look at some of the issues that we face in our marriages and in life on tensions. So we commit this day to you, this time to you, in Christ's name. Amen. The reason that I gave it this long title, Addressing the Tensions Between Husbands and Wives in the Reality of Work, Family, and Ministry, it isn't a marriage workshop that we're going to do. And the first thing I want to say is tensions are not bad. First of all, they're reality. And secondly, the tensions are actually constructive. If you didn't have tensions, I don't know what would happen. You know, I don't do a lot of weights, but I have, because I had a shoulder injury in handball, I've been going to physical therapy, and one thing that was given to me were a set of bands, you know, that you're pulling, and so you do it. Now, if they had no tension, it wouldn't build anything. And so I'm very, very faithful, not because I am highly motivated for exercise, but because I want to play handball. So, you know, yesterday I was doing those bands, and they helped build up the muscles around the injury that I had. Now, this really is going to be a workshop in the sense that that I'm not going to do a whole bunch of lecture, and I also feel that we have not figured it out. So Mary and I still have a lot of tensions. We had some on them coming into work this morning or into on the Glen. But I'd like to describe a little bit of the kind of tensions that Mary and I have encountered. And she's mic'd up, so even though she's not, quote, doing a big piece of the workshop, I'm going to bring her in at various points to comment from her viewpoint of where these tensions arise. In a few minutes, on that one sheet that I gave you, we're going to stop and have you actually write down the tensions that you face so that there's a reality that comes to it. So I think the quote that I would give is, tensions are inevitable but need not to be eternal. You don't have to have them going on all the time. And if you're not experiencing tension in your marriage, you're not alive, or else you've given up. One way that people get out of tensions is just to leave, to close out, to stop, and say, "I'm not going to do anything anymore." So there's healthy tension and there's unhealthy tension. There has to be a limit to the tensions and a way to work with the tensions. Now, I'm going to give four illustrations of where our tensions come up for Mary and me. And some of them were there from the very beginning, and that's one of the things I'm going to have you work on, is whether these tensions were there right at the beginning or whether they came up recently. But we'll talk about that. First of all, in our early marriage, we were just incredibly busy. And when I think about Larry's comment this morning about His wife not telling him this story until 26 years into their marriage. Well, at our 25th anniversary, shortly thereafter, Mary said, "You know, I really wondered in those early years if you really loved me." And I said, "That's kind of a surprise." And, well, why? You know, why now? I don't know why now, but that's what we happened to discuss at that time. But the major thing that we encountered was my busyness, I guess our busyness, and our inability to express the tension that it was creating. And we ran into a pretty significant crisis at about the four-year point in our marriage. I think both of us would agree that the marriage wasn't going to break up, but it sure wasn't fun. Because from her viewpoint, and I'll let her speak to that in a little bit, this isn't the way marriage is supposed to be. You know, I was a young lieutenant. I was involved in the space program. I was involved in the various speaking things. I was working 12, 14 hours a day, sometimes around the clock. We had a new baby, had a second one then. Mary worked at a job for part of those 2 years at Cape Canaveral. I was involved in the Choral Society. We were teaching Sunday school. We were leading the youth program and the base chapel. I mean, I was playing sports. You know, basically living like a single man, but yet had this wife and child at home, and not quite knowing where all that fit. And it was really tense, and it exploded. The second thing that we have had constant tension on through the years is our schedules. And that is, what activities should we actually do, and what shouldn't we do? Because we have a different set of way, just the way we think. The way I think, the way Mary thinks, is just very different about what we ought to do with the available time that we have. The third major issue is, what is actually important? Priorities. That was the tension this morning. So we're driving in, and I'll try and give the description of this because it's pretty current. We haven't resolved it yet. Last night, now if several of you came in and said, "Well, where's Mary?" Well, one of our granddaughters came huffing up to the house. She lived 12 houses away. So in this cold weather, came and her nose was on the window, you know, as I came down just a few minutes before we came out here last night, the laundry. And the way most grandchildren are, what they want right now. You know, it's not tomorrow. Well, what she wanted was a Sound of Music dress for Immigration Day, which is the 31st of this month. So Mary and she are on the internet looking for little German dresses or little Norwegian dresses or little whatever dresses. And we're supposed to leave. So we couldn't find it. And so this morning Mary's on the telephone. And so basically what ends up happening is Mary sews these dresses, or tries to. She does a very good job of it. And I said, "Why are you doing that? You know, can't we, you know, what about the mothers? Don't they do, you know?" So we got on this little tension this morning as to why by Tuesday night do we have to have this done, or does she have to have this done? Well, it's a matter of priorities. You know, that's important to Mary. It's important to me, but I sense it differently. Okay, Mary, speak. Or forever hold your peace on your side of this thing from today.
We did. We've had this quite often as far as how much I will support the grandchildren or acquiesce to their little demands and so on. And I suppose I didn't read quite fair this morning on the way into the conference because I said, "Well, you know, when you suppress my desire to do this, then I'm not allowed to express my spiritual gifting, which is serving." Well, this isn't it. And we have had this tension over the years. What does God want us to do? When we were so busy back in those early days in Florida, I felt like when I was trying to slow down the steamroller, that I was saying to Jerry, well, what God is leading me to do isn't important to me. So, you know, sometimes we have to eliminate the Lord from the discussions because that can be a little too heavy. But I don't know how this is going to resolve. Searching somewhere else.
I know how it's going to resolve. You're going to end up sewing the dress. And
I tried to teach our daughters to sew, and it didn't pan out.
And I keep saying to them, what are you going to do when we're gone? But this is a real tension. Now, it has to do with priorities. It's not that I don't care about the grandchildren. We do all kinds of stuff. But it comes... And there's not even anything that it's in conflict with, so to speak. But there is going to be a time limit, and I know what's going to happen. And I say, no, why can't, and I've named my daughter's name, go to the internet herself and find this stuff? So would she, but we ended up in tension on it, okay? Yeah. If you can help us, or someone to sew it. Maybe find it, but anyhow. So, but this is pretty typical for Mary and me on how we have our different priorities. And we're both busy and engaged people. And we both do a lot together. And so the question is, when do I drive the priorities? And when does Mary drive the priorities? Okay, now that brings me to the fourth illustration that I probably got a dozen just from our marriage. You'll think we're a mess. but it's a difference in capacity. And I have, as people have told me, a very high capacity. Okay, and I can just keep going and don't run down. And Mary has a much more limited capacity for people, for events, for schedules. You know, I can put 5 things in a day and it not even bother me. In fact, I'd rather put 5 things in a day. But for Mary, on her perspective, having 1 thing in a day takes the day. I mean, it doesn't take all day, but it consumes that. Why don't you say something about the capacity issue? Because that's been a major issue for us other also.
I don't think we recognize how different we are in capacity at the beginning of our marriage. And we are different, very different personality-wise. Jerry is an extrovert, I'm an introvert. As an extrovert, he relates widely with people, but in a less intense way. I was going to say shallow, but that's not it.
Thank you.
When I'm with someone, I give all my energy to that person, and then that wears me down to a certain extent. So, and I would like to be very intentional when we're relating with people. Whereas Jerry has an aroused curiosity, there will be events to which we'll be invited, and he'll say, well, let's just go and see what happens. And events really aren't that crucial to our lives or our ministry. But he likes to go and just, maybe God will do something new and differently. And so this is where a lot of tension has come from, how our capacities enter into, and our personalities enter into what we do.
Just to give you an illustration, in terms of this relating thing, I'm on my cell phone as we're driving down the road, and I'm describing this other individual to somebody. Well, you really need to get in touch with Ken, but I'll say someone else, and because he's really a good friend, and you'll like him. And I hang up and says, Mary says, what do you mean he's a good friend? You've only met him twice. Well, we move quickly in our friendships, but... It's this perspective thing, and then why should we do it? So part of the issue is, when do I give in? When does she give in? When do we fight about it and compromise? And then the issue is, when does that tension overflow into anger and fighting or bitterness that's just suppressed and end up with real deep difficulties in our lives? And so that's what we want to talk about. So the question is there hope? When do you break or just give up and saying it's worthless? We've had this tension for 40-some years, and it's not going to end, and it's never going to get better. That's one way you can address it. Or do we just simply tolerate it and let it sort of seed underneath? And I don't know whether you'll come away from this with an answer exactly for this, but here is what the goal of this time is to be. It always helps to know what the outcome might be. I would like to provide you with a few tools to work on this. That's all it's going to be. I'm not going to give you some answers, because I can't answer for you just like you can't answer for me. And I sure can't so address. You know, and I, so I can't relieve this, whatever. So when is compromise supposed to be a part of the solution? And I think there is. One of my earlier pastors wrote a book called Compromise is Not a Dirty Word. And that's really true. Okay, here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to take that little tension survey, and I'm going to give you 5 minutes to do this, maybe a little less, because you've already got them in your head, so you might as well write them down. Write down the two or three issues that cause tensions for you as a couple. I would do this individually, and then if you want to share them together, and then check over on the right-hand side, did this start in early marriage, mid-marriage, or recent? Okay? Sam, everything's early marriage for you. Okay. Does everybody have one of these tension surveys? Okay. I'll give you about another minute. Okay, I'm not going to have you share them publicly, but I would like to say, how many of your have you wrote down something on tension that relates to scheduling? Okay? How many of you wrote down something on tension that has to do with the difference of perspective between you and your wife or priorities or something like that? Okay? Okay, several did that. Okay, I could go to several others, but let me just press on. We're enough on the same page. First of all, in that first little section under the issues, I want to just put down that tensions come primarily from the conflict of desires and expectations. Okay, tensions come primarily from the conflict of desires and expectations. Now, Larry shared that perfectly. Here we get married, and we have an inner desire, and we have some expectations of the other person. And the problem is, neither of you are mind readers. So you can't tell what the other person's desires are, nor what their expectations might be. Scripture was hard to come by on this. I picked out a couple passages that I'll mention to you, because most of the time the scriptures speak to when tension has erupted into conflict, anger, and bitterness, and how to address that. But first of all, I think a core passage is 1 Peter 3. Let me read it just so that it's in our minds. And often this is used in a very different way. It's on marriage counseling, and it gets misunderstood because of submission issues and all that. But let's take it as it said. Wives, in the same way, as Christ is subject to the church, be submissive to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives. I think that applies whether in believing and non-believing communities. There is a sense of winning by behavior. When they see the purity and reverence of your lives, your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Now, that can be twisted in so many strange ways in terms of total submissiveness, never speaking up and all that. That is not what this means. That is not the issue. And for husbands, it's not your commanding and saying this is how you're supposed to act, but for a woman to say the real beauty of life comes from inside. And part of that is expressed in my relationship to God and my relationship to my husband. Verse 7 says, husbands, in the same way. Now that means that the husband has all those same things for himself. Be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. Now, one of the books that I'm going to recommend to you is this book, Love and Respect. I can't even pronounce it. Egerich, Emerson Egerich. Did you go to it? Yeah, I've heard, and we have heard him speak. It's just superb. The basic issue. Now, help me on this, Sam, and Mary, because you were at this one too, is he says that women need love and men need respect. And then he illustrates that through a lot of different ways. So, love and respect, and if you have an opportunity to go to his seminar, it's well worth it. Nobody comes out of that seminar feeling beat up. Is that right, Sam and Carrie? Sam, did you come out of that feeling beat up? You know, sorry I ever asked. But you were illuminated? Well, it's one of the things, I've only put three references down. Yeah. We haven't been through the whole thing. We've been through part of it. And our daughter went through it. And the one whose little daughter came over to our house yesterday. And before they went, they fought like cats and dogs. I said, this marriage is not going to last. Why did she throw off the balcony of their first apartment, his day book? I can't figure what it was. But there was some big deal. And they went and said, this has helped us more than anything else, to really understand one another. So those are some key issues. And I've got various other passages. But let me go ahead now and just talk. What are the issues? And I'm going to go through these fairly briefly because you'll need to address them yourself. First of all, there is the dilemma of work and career. And there are two issues to be noted that I would note here, and that is, this is how most men think. They think of their work and career. Now, I'll put a statement in here, and this is an overgeneralization, but I'll say it anyhow. Most women do not understand how important a man's career and work is to his identity and being. Okay? It's just a fact. And most men do not understand why a woman longs for a relationship more than anything else. and understanding and being able to honor her and her gift. It's just like ships passing in the night. Now, why is it that work is such a big deal to a man? Well, I don't know that. You'll have to ask God that. But that seems to be the way God created him. Now, but there is also an issue of provision. At the beginning, a man works primarily to provide. And then, if he's successful, it becomes far more than provision. It becomes his identity. I've been working the last couple days on a talk that I'm going to give up in Denver on February 3rd called the Dangerous Man Seminar. And it has to do with the identity. And the question is, who are you? And where do you find your identity? Most men find their identity mostly in their work. Most women find their identity mostly in their family, if they're married and have children, or in some other thing. Now, it's not. There are wonderful career women, many of you may be, who have a tremendous identity. I'm not talking about the glass ceiling. I'm not talking about all the things that are here in our society, but I'm just trying to talk generally. So therefore, you have this dilemma of work and career that needs to come into some perspective and understanding. The second issue is, I just put that on identity, the prioritization, that's wrong. That means provision. She couldn't read my writing. Okay. The second thing is the dilemma of lifestyle. And that is, how much of what is enough? How much of what is enough? And this is a very subtle issue. And see, now, what Mary and I would want as something is somewhat in proportion to our financial capability, which isn't super big. But my observation is that the more you have, the more you want. And even though when you're married, you get by in this little two-bedroom house with whatever, somehow when you have the capability, you want more, or you want this vacation, or you want that. Now, it's not all bad. It's just that there can come this discussion over lifestyle. What are the limits to it? And the tensions, and then that brings me to the next one. And that is, if I can get this thing going, our perspective on money. Did any of you put down in your tensions money as a conflict? Okay, yeah, several did. Now, how does that come about? Okay, first of all, when you're young, it comes about with money running out. You never have enough. And you're living from one paycheck to the next. And so therefore, you bring together two perspectives on money, and you start entering into tension over how you use it and what it should be used for. And your backgrounds play a lot into that. Then as you start to get more, that is, you have adequate for provision, it's how much should be used on us, how much should be used on the kids, how much should be used to give, for instance? How generous should you be? And so when you get to a certain point of life, the conflict over money is still there, but it's a different conflict. How much should I give to the kids? I mean, what Mike and Bill are doing in that workshop right now is talking about a perspective of money and how much should one give to your children. And how should you give it to them? And I've talked in length with Michael on this. And the fact is, we know that most of what you leave by way of inheritance doesn't help at all. And if it's a lot, it usually hinders. But that's a whole other topic. But right now, it's the issue of how should we use what we have. And so I'm pointing out the tension. Okay, the next one, well, it has to do with the use of money, wants versus needs. Now, the fact is, someone says, my kids say, what do you want for Christmas, Dad? And the fact is, I don't need anything. I don't need anything. I'm not even sure I want much. But yet the little wants still seem to come up in some way or another. And then the whole issue of generosity. For instance, Mary has grown up in a home where her parents are extremely generous. So she loves to give. I grew up in a home where it wasn't even part of the concept, and where we had so little that everything was protected and you kept and you saved and you don't throw it out and you don't scratch it up. You see? And that leads to all kinds of conflicts also, which we have had our share of. And giving to the money. Now, this one is an important one, and I want to be sure that we leave time for interaction with you. That is the perspective, the tension of personality. Mary touched on that, in that we have very different personalities. And that's most often the case in marriages. I mean, that's just life. You know, we seem to opposites attract and all that sort of thing. But the fact is, we are a certain kind of person, and love soon grows dim, and the personalities start to come out and actually irritate each other. And that irritation causes the tension. And so we have to live with that. And then Mary has also brought out the issue of the tension of gifting. My gifting drives to a large extent what we do in our marriage. I mean, whether I like it or whether I don't, that has been the case. I don't know whether that's good, but it's something that normally happens in most marriages. The man's gifting drives it the hardest because of the provision, because of the career, because of all kinds of things. But then later on, you realize this tension of personality really starts getting to you, and so you end up going to marriage seminars. And you end up talking about love languages, and you end up talking about this and that, and they're all very good. But just recognize we really are different personalities. And then here's what most marriage seminars will focus on, the breakdown of communication. That is, we haven't learned to talk about it in a way that is not destructive. Now, all three of the references that I put at the end refer to how to talk to one another about it. And I'm going to describe each of those three. Yeah, Sam? Yeah, not wrong, just different. Yeah. But she really is wrong. So what do I know? No. And see, that's the point. We're willing to admit it, but to actually live with it is what is so difficult. So we have this breakdown of communication, and this is where we come into this idea of the conflict of expectations. What I expect out of the marriage and what she expects out of the marriage. And it's a conflict of need. And another one that is there, though we don't talk often about it, are the sexual tensions. Everybody has them. There is nobody in any marriage that I have ever discovered that there is not sexual tension. I'm not going to get into it a lot here, but the fact is it exists. One's desires, one's needs, the way it's expressed, whether a person feels used, and where does the marriage break down? Many marriages break up with a violation of the sexual covenant. Isn't that true? That often happens. And then they find nothing. I've got a brother who's in his sixth marriage. This one's lasted a while, but My guess is that, you know, it had to do in the early days with a lot of this stuff. So, but it is a tension that needs to be addressed. It's very real. It's classic. But not as often talked about. It's talked about in Cosmopolitan and all those places. Every time I go through the grocery store, I see these things. And it's how to have the perfect sex life. That's idiocy. I mean, but it's what everybody wants. Because both men and women buy it. And it's just life. And I mean, I've been influenced. I think men are influenced by that more than women, but women are too. Now, the danger is that tension leads to tearing. And that's what you want to prevent, if at all possible. Okay, so we don't want it to tear, and then we don't want things like anger and bitterness and just giving up to come in, and then resentment. And what happens is these tensions then cause resentment to build over a period of time. They may never break the marriage because you're committed to the marriage, but they really take the enjoyment out of the marriage. Okay, I'm going to go on here in a moment to some key solutions. I couldn't even figure out how to write that down because I would not be presumptuous to say, okay, here's the 1, 2, 3 that you do. But let me have a little feedback now. Are those major tensions what you've experienced? Does that sort of categorize them? Is there something I've missed there? Because there could well be. Does that pretty well summarize the kind of things? Now, some have one more than another. And I would guess that all of us have all of them to some degree because they're pretty common to marriage. Okay, the
one that I thought of was in-laws or family.
Oh, yeah.
I have a wonderful mother-in-law.
Yeah. Right. Okay, that would be another good one. Tensions over family obligations, for instance. And Mary has just a wonderful set of brothers and sisters. I don't quite have that in my family. My family is somewhat of a mess in that regard. And we don't have too much tension over, but there's a little bit that has come up through the years is who's going to spend time with which family and to what extent and that. So that's a very good point. Thanks, June. Okay, let's go on to some key solutions. The first one that I want to mention, and I've already mentioned, is love and respect. Now, this is a tool that you need to go into, and I would encourage you to both get the book. I think there is a DVD series that he has done on it. Isn't there, Mary? I think we have that, or at least a CD series. And it is the best description that I have found in terms of what each of us need. Love and respect. So I'm not going to say a whole lot more on that, although Ephesians says to husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way that we actually do try and understand one another. That doesn't mean you'll agree. That doesn't mean you'll solve it or like it. And that is what the next point actually is, living in an understanding way. And this came up the other day again on the issue of an argument. And it's, do you want to be right or do you want to be in relationship? And I am built so that I want to be right. Winning an argument is really important to me. Now, I cover it beautifully.
Not always.
Not always, yeah. Thank you, dear. But what the understanding way means is trying to go after the underlying issues in our lives. And that's what Larry was trying to address this morning, I think. What are those underlying issues? I love his illustration of a tick and a dog. He says most marriages are the tick and the dog. You know, the tick wants to get all satisfaction, but most are two ticks and no dog. You know, that is that no marriage relationship will ever satisfy you completely. Now, it's so simple to say, well, yeah, you look to God and all this, and it becomes kind of ethereal after a while. So, living in an understanding way. Do you want to be right or to be in relationship? I think that's down there. Oh, we interviewed one couple on this. When I shared, I told them I was going to use the illustration, but I wouldn't identify them. So, and they both have gone to counseling. They both talked through in our presence what some of the issues were, and we walked through it with them. But she said he didn't understand that I wanted to be told that I am important. So she said, the biggest thing that came out is, please tell me that I am important. Now, there were other issues that were involved in their marriage, but that was a big one for her, that understanding way. The next one has to do with listening and communication. I think I've skipped one in here, but let me just put that. Now, we talked about that, the ability to listen and the ability to communicate. I'm going to come back to that. I want to see if this other one is in here. No, it isn't. Let me slip it in. I forgot to put it in. And it has to do with the beauty of compromise. I do believe that we need to compromise. And it need not to be a grudging compromising. But it is a compromise of personality. It's a compromise of time. It's a compromise of priority. And it's one in which you do not keep score. Well, I compromised last time. You need to compromise this time. But it has to do with an interaction. And then we come to this next one, understanding and forgiving the past. And for that, I want to mention a book to you that I think is quite helpful. It's called Unclaimed Baggage. This book is by Don and Jan Frank. They've done a lot of marriage seminars and various things. Jan's a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she's done a number of things. But the biggest thing I got out of this book was the issue that you're at this baggage carousel in the airport. Okay, and you find your bags. There are always some bags that aren't claimed. And they used this illustration. And the idea was that everybody brings into their marriage baggage from their past, from their family, from their sexual history, from their past marriage history, and you have to sort that baggage. The first thing you have to do is identify the baggage, and they do a good job of helping you identify that baggage. The second thing is you have to evaluate the baggage. That is to say, that's good bag, and I want to keep it in our family, and we're going to find a place in our house for it. Or it's to discard the baggage and saying, I really like that stuff, but it's not something that I'm going to die over. And the other is stuff that's just bad baggage. But you can't evaluate the baggage until you identify it. And so then, with that... you start seeing each other's set of baggage, and you bring it in, and start looking at it, and it's a way of looking at it a little more dispassionately. And I think you would find yourself encouraged by this book, and you'd find it just helpful to you. You know, half of this stuff is just talking about it, and without getting angry. And if you can talk about it before you become too angry and too bitter, it will help you. Now, Mary and I have talked through the years about the differences between, help me, dear, it's resolution and reconciliation. Is that tell us about that. Give us an illustration there.
We could be reconciled in our relationship without resolving the issues. Maybe kind of the first example would be one of you is Republican and one of you is Democrat. And you are reconciled as a couple and just go away on the issue of politics. You will probably never resolve it unless one of you is still strong and convincing. But that is the idea, that we want to be reconciled and have peace in our relationship, even if some of the issues never get resolved.
Now, see, the willingness to live with a certain level of lack of resolution is a pretty big step. I'm not very neat. Mary's very neat. I got up this morning to find my shoes where I'd left them scattered somewhere, and she'd put them away. Now, who would ever think of putting away my shoes when I know I'm going to step into them tomorrow morning? It just doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, well, that's a minor one, but it's pretty big in our marriage. The whole issue of neatness and messiness is a big issue in our marriage. We have finally convinced her to let some cleaners come in, but I said, don't ever enter my office. Her or you can come in, but don't do anything with it because it's just the way it is. Now, so I've got this little... pardon me? I vacuumed it once a year. Once a year or so, and I straightened things about. The two snowstorms were great. I got my office really straightened up. Now, no one would think it's straightened up, but it's for me. And then at my work, my secretary makes sure I'm presentable. But it just is part of who I am. Now, I'm not very proud of it because I just have come to recognize I can have three things on a desk and it'll still look messy. So, but that's there's. Did I call on you? Go ahead. Yeah. What is it?
When there's a downside from our perspective to somebody's activity or personality, there's always an upside. And Jim's priority is people. And you can't see the dust. And I keep the door shut, so we live in harmony.
Yeah, it's helpful in that regard. Now, I'm going to put down counseling. I'll give two illustrations. Early in my leadership in the Navigators, I brought in a counselor to talk to every couple on our staff. He's another Nav staff, is a good listener and so forth. I said, well, start with us. And all we wanted to do was to have him say, is there any issue you want to talk about that you don't want to talk with Jerry about as your leader and that I can just help you with? And it was really helpful. I mean, we uncovered some things. Then not long ago, I discovered some counselors through some other friends, and I've listed them in your outline. The Beckers, did I do at the cottage? Did I put that in there at the end? Okay. And I've had a number of my friends that I've encouraged to spend time with the Beckers, not to solve a big problem, but primarily to work with them. Finally, one of my friends says to me, Jerry, you and Mary need to go. And I said, oh, okay. I'm not sure I want to do this. I'm happy to recommend it, but to go and subject myself, I'm not sure I want to do it. And I said, okay. He said, okay, what date? I said, wait a minute, this is a little too... And then he picked up the phone and called them. Well, we got on their schedule, and we've known him for a number of years, and so we actually went and spent, I think it was 4 days with them, and 3 days. Normally they spend 4 or 5, and it's not super intense. But what I like about it, they really helped us through some communication issues, because our marriage is relatively good. So Mary, why don't you, I don't even want to talk about this one part, so why don't you go ahead and say what they said was an issue in our communication. I don't like this. Now, go ahead.
They're very observant, and you simply want to form a few hours and kind of ask you to, you know, pose a question and listen as you talk it through with each other. And one thing that they said is that Jerry is quite a salesman, and that when we're discussing an issue, he will continue to encourage me to see his point of view. And they counseled us to bring it to a head once we feel we have come to an agreement. And this has been an issue for us, because we'll discuss something in our marriage. Maybe we just say, take a schedule. Should we travel to this conference? And I will say no, because, and I'll list the reasons. And so, okay. But then 2 days later, Jerry will say, have you given any more thought?
Okay, now tell them what they told you to do.
They said to stand up and kick his shin.
No. There were other issues. That's all right. We don't need to go. But what they...
I would acquiesce too much, is what they were saying.
Yeah.
To give in.
Acquiesce. She would give in too quickly or too much. Now, it wasn't that they put all the blame on me. We actually had a couple issues. They said, well, pick one and let's just talk about it. And so we did. Now, what Walt and Fran did for us was to give us a method of talking about issues. And they never said, you're right, you're wrong, whatever. But they gave us a little structure by which we could communicate. And I won't take a little time to work through what that is. We need to practice it more often, because usually we get caught up in the moment of things and we forget to go back and use the methods that they taught us. So I recommend a counselor that allows you just to talk and go before you have big issues. And I like the Beckers. They do it differently. It's not every week. Our friends that I just referred to go weekly. And just so that you can kind of put it out there. And it's hard to find these people to do that, by the way. It's hard to find a counselor to do it that will just be pretty balanced on the thing. The Beckers, I found, have been very good, and I've had a number of our friends, a couple of times it didn't help too much. So they don't bat 100%. Well, I don't know what they do or not, but from the perspective of some that we've sent to them, haven't bat 100% in terms of it really being of help. So I just want to put that out as a possibility. And then exactly what Larry shared this morning is time away together. Just to talk about some of these things. I think that's very, very important. I'm going to go and do this last part, and then I want to just talk about a way forward. First of all, you've already done part of this, just to identify your tension points. And we're going to have some time to actually do that here in a minute. And then on the tension points, I would encourage you to rate them as severe, serious, or moderate. And I'm going to give you a, I think I've got another handout. I'll give that to you in a little bit. Okay, just say, you know, some tensions are just moderate and they're going to be there. Now, if you disagree on whether they're severe, serious, or moderate, then you have to talk about it a little bit. And then try and see, okay, what is the source of this tension? Okay, let me give you an illustration. Is it personality? Is it background? You know, where does it come from? And that's where that baggage discussion will help you. You know, why do we have this tension? Now, on the sheet I gave you before, I asked you to identify, is this from early marriage, mid-marriage, recent, etc. Okay, then, as you've done this, you rate them, as I shared here, share them with each other. You know, and try to come to an understanding. Make sure you understand what the other person is saying about that tension and how they feel about that tension. And then I would encourage you to tap into a few, and I underline few, resources. That's why I've only given you a bibliography of three. They're maybe not the best. I put Larry Crabb's Marriage Builder in there. What did I put in? Yeah, but I showed you one book, in Love Respect. Yeah. Oh, and then Counselors. Yeah, I knew I'd put four things down. Now, I would just encourage you to just do a few resources. Don't try and cover the waterfront, because they're all going to say about the same thing, just in a little different way. Like, there are hundreds of books on marriage, hundreds of books on communication. You don't need 100 books on communication. What you need is just a few tools to help each other in this area. So tap into a few resources, and then I would encourage you to, I've got too many things in my list here. Okay, try to determine, this is pretty important, what can be changed and what is unlikely to change. I don't mean impossible to change, it's just unlikely. I mean, I'm not going to radically change my personality. I'm not going to, unless I become ill, I'm not going to radically change my capacity. And that will happen sometime, by the way. My capacity will diminish. I'm not, and Mary is not going to change her personality from being an introvert. But I need to say, on the tensions, what are the possibilities that can be changed or moderated? And then I think after that, is just simply to resolve to take some steps to resolve, or rather to reduce the tension. I don't think it's realistic to eliminate them. I just don't think it'll happen. I mean, I'd love to say that you'll never sin again in your life. I'd love to say you're never going to become angry again. But what we have to do is learn to have a certain aspect of reality about our marriage and who we are, and to reduce those major tensions so that we deal with them better. And then I believe, as we get down toward the end, I think there are three keys. One is just communication. This is simple. Second is understanding. And the third is surrender. In other words, we want to communicate about what they are. We want to understand both ourselves and the other's viewpoint. And then there will be some aspect of surrendering to the other person. and it's going to be a compromise. And I would take if some of your areas that are easier to work on. There are probably some major long-standing things that all of us have. I wouldn't tackle that first. So, okay, let's just have some interaction. Then I'm going to give you a few minutes to work on something. I've got a little handout for you on this. So let's just questions and comments on this. Yeah, Sam?
We had to tap into a few. Not to sound like a problem, but there's a verse that tells me so much in the Psalm, 119 Psalm, verse 24 in the King James.
Yeah.
That word is my delight and my comfort.
Right.
Psalm translation is just comfort.
Yeah.
So before getting into the attention part, that's where you go with the word, stick there, then you're more effective with your life.
Yeah. Okay, now I really think. I think that's key. Your own relationship with God has to be first. And I didn't emphasize that enough, but that wasn't what the topic was. If your relationship with God on a daily basis is not there, you won't have a basis on which to do some of these other things. So I really agree with you, Sam. Just a personal time with God, that He gives you that motivation to do that. Proverbs 17:14 says, starting a quarrel is like breaching a dam. So drop the matter before a dispute breaks out. There are a lot of good passages on this. Proverbs 19:11, a man's wisdom gives him patience. It is his glory to overlook an offense. And so forth. There are a lot of things out of the Proverbs, but your relationship with God is very key. Okay, what are some of your reflections on this? Yes.
When you bring up some of the issues, there can be a vicious cycle where you can talk about all these things, but it never really resolved. Like if you go away for a week,
yeah,
with each other, and you just continue in a vicious cycle, then there has to be some kind of guidelines once you get there to that time.
Yeah.
Or you come out of the way angrier.
Right. So there has to be, what it said is that it can be a vicious cycle. You can talk about it, you can recognize it, and never go anywhere. And somehow you have to resolve that we are going to take some steps to help reduce, and it has to be mutually agreeable. Some steps to mutually reduce the tension. That's why I said, I don't think you're going to eliminate it totally. Now, obviously, if there's sin on one of our parts, you know, with anger and various things, we need to deal with that. But that's where I believe either friends, and I believe another couple, can help in this. Mary and I have a covenant group of three other couples. And some of these things come out in that group. And as others listen to us interact, they really help us. But if you just put the two of you over here, in each individual area, one of you is too powerful for the other. And it's not always the man or not always the woman. You're too powerful. And you exert that power, and therefore it never gets resolved. And so when you have another person involved or present, it really moderates the power factor. But few of us want to be that vulnerable. Yeah. Ted.
You mentioned time away together. Some time away separately.
True. Yeah.
We need to see a perspective.
Right. Yeah.
I travel a lot, so I often reflect upon how I left the situation.
Yeah. I think the time apart is good. It depends on what you do in the time apart. You know, you have to have some guidelines as to how to think about these things. And that's why I talk about these few. We sometimes need some resources, like Unclaimed Baggage, like the book on Love and Respect, to teach us things we don't know. All of you are in professions of some sort or another. in that profession, you have developed a set of skills and knowledge. And the developing those skills and knowledge allow you then to do something. We need to develop skills and knowledge in the area of our relationships and marriage. And most often we don't get that. The other problem is nobody ever holds us accountable. But by that I mean nobody ever checks up and saying, how are you doing? Well, you talk to the one man, oh, I'm doing terrible, I'm doing this, we argued about that. You talk to the wife, oh, but if when you're together and saying, oh, how are you doing, it's a different picture. So, and no one can make us do any of this stuff. But if you want the relationship to be better, I think we need to. Some other comments? Yes, Karen. Compromise is not a dirty word. Of course, in confrontation, for me, I get defensive. I don't know about you. No one, you probably do. But and we all have different levels of ability to handle confrontation. Some get very hurt. Others become angry. And so it has to be done with real care. In one of the instances of a couple I sent to the Beckers, one of the one spouse, I had to be very vague on this, said things that had never been said to the other before, and it was pretty heavy, and it didn't resolve very, very well. And so there are just some things we need to say. It's like Larry shared this morning, you know, things that Rachel had said to him that he had never heard before. Okay, let me leave it at that. Yeah, Al?
Just finishing up the book by Gary Smalley on I Promise.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, and I'm still trying to sort through it, but I just finished it, but you mentioned security. And is the marriage an environment where you feel secure with one another to share things?
Yeah.
And then you talked about some other things about, you know, choices, where I have a choice of how I'm going to respond when there's a conflict or when there's an issue. And then there's the other thing that you mentioned was that I can't change, you know, my spouse's, I'm not to change my spouse, but I certainly change me. I have a choice to change my response to how I
right.
do things. So it's just something to think through.
Yeah, so Gary Smalley is another good resource, by the way. I think Gary has written some very, very good things that will help. The way I look at a lot of these, you know, we have, you know, I think of the books we've written, I don't think there's a thing in them that's new. It's just that it's reinforcing things that others have said. And that's why I talk, Al, about just a few resources. They'll give you enough simulation to do it. There's an old book called Caring Enough to Confront that was very good. The willingness to actually risk your relationship, but if you're not secure in the relationship, you won't do it. Yeah. That's true. But confronting has to be done when it's not at such a high level of frustration. Let me give... Wait a second here. I want to... was going to give a couple of friend of ours this outline before they left, but that's all right. Okay, this little handout that I've just given you is just a worksheet. And that worksheet, what I would really encourage you to do is just simply to pick two or three things and say, I'm going to work on this tension, so we're going to discuss it, whatever the case may be, and do it. All I could promise you in this workshop was to give you some tools. And so that's what I'm trying to give you in this. And so, let's see, I gave away, can I have one copy of it? Right here we are. No, that's all right, I got it set here. Okay, just simply, key tensions, you want a lesson. What are some key solutions for you and some possible action steps for one or two of them? It doesn't take much of a genius to figure these out because, boy, they're there. They're in your minds. They're happening all the time. And I don't want you to feel like you're being beat upon, and you and your spouse should not feel like you're beating on one another in this. What you want to do is to say, let's help work through some of these things. But we are so ingrained in our ways that the fact is we don't want to change. So it sometimes needs the stimulation of a book, of a time of counseling with somebody, or of friends who listen, and getting it out on the table and to work on it. So I don't have a rip-roaring conclusion for you. That's my that's what I've got for you today. And we are working on it. We are trying to figure out how do we lessen some of these tensions. And again, I want to iterate, these are not bad. They can become very bad. But if you work on them, they can actually become strengthening over a period of time. So let's just pray and close. Lord, help us to understand ourselves more deeply and better. I pray that you would give wisdom on how to proceed. And Lord, help us not to think that there's any magic 1, 2, 3 answers on this. But be willing to, by the leading of your Spirit, to take these things one at a time and bring them to you and allow you to work them in our lives. We pray in Christ's name. Amen.